Live from the Talking Joe Studios,
it's Talking Joe.
Talking Joe is on the air.
It is indeed me, Mark, from Talking Joe, and you are watching Talking Joe, the comic book podcast for G.I. Joe. I pinged Diana Davis, who is... checks job description, now the creative consultant for G.I. Joe, a real American hero, which just came out this last Wednesday. So I said to Diana, do you want to pop on? We can talk G.I. Joe for a little bit. She said, sure. So that is what we are going to do. It's Diana, everybody.
Yay!
Thanks so much for joining us. I imagine it's been a heck of a week. Has it been just exciting times all around?
Yeah. Yeah, the build-up's been great. I've been excited for actually around a year, but this last month it sort of crescendoed until I was basically bouncing up and down waiting. And yesterday was fantastic, so it was a lot of fun to see the reaction hit.
That's great.
Yeah, over the last year it's like, okay, I can't wait till they find out when we officially reveal, and then multiple times somebody's over your way has been ruining my party. With his reveals of things.
Oh, right.
He shall not be named. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Wreck my fun. But this time, he didn't reveal, you know, there was only so much he could reveal. So,
yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
It was a great day.
When it gets actually just, you know, enjoying the detail of the story, there's only so much you can reveal. Actually, at a certain point, you just have to sit down and read the darn comic book.
Dang comic. Yeah, yeah.
And see what you think of it. Yeah.
Well, I was half expecting him to do some sort of story time where he read and held up pages because, you know, just wreck everyone's secrets, right? But no, I'm glad. And everyone I spoke to yesterday, that we're really happy. Larry had a great day yesterday, I'm told. So he had a blast.
Yeah. So Larry was, I think, yesterday evening at Forbidden Planet in New York. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. He was doing a signing there. And I think earlier in the week, he went down to CGC in Florida to sign books with Kubert. So that's great. And, you know, it's cool to see it hit so well and people be so happy and going into second printing because sold out at the, retailer level. I've had people say I went to my comic book shop an hour after they opened and there were none.
And my local comic book story is that for 20 years I've been basically the sole subscriber to G.I. Joe. And I saw on their social media this week, they posted, you know, that they had their hot comic of the week was G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, yeah, yay.
You're getting it for people that aren't me.
That's amazing. Yeah, the place I used to do pulls is like you and one other guy is the only, and now it's different. I think they learned, at least out here, I'm not saying they learned, that's rude, but I think the Void Rivals release, sort of any comic retailer that didn't get it realized, oh, shoot, you know, maybe we should not hold off on those things because, you know, I found it at three stores and a couple of other stores said we didn't know what it was. But now that they were aware, they're stocking these things ahead of time.
Yeah, that 1-2-3 of Void Rivals being such a spectacular sort of out of nowhere blow up success, followed by, you know, Transformers being a massive success and going back to, you know, whatever printing that's on. I think Void Rivals might be on a fifth printing or something?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
You know, Transformers back to multiple printing being super hot. And then, you know, G.I. Joe is part of that collective family. So it's only helping it all and sort of adding to that collective excitement. So that's, it's great. Have you got any idea of the sort of sales numbers that G.I. Joe is
no. All I know is that the sellout was at the retailer retailer level, the
distributor.
The distributor level, so they're gone. I have no clue as to the sales in stores yet, and I don't think we'll really know until sometime next week when there's time to compile it.
Yeah, I can only imagine that it will be many multiples of a standard you know, monthly that we've been, you know, has been the routine for, you know, the previous era. So that's exciting. Yeah. It's likely reach a much bigger audience to, you know, dig their teeth into it.
I think so. Yeah, it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying to see that the book is, people wanted it. People were running out to get it. People were, you know, I know there's tons of variant covers, which completists are upset about some of them. And I get it. You know, when you want one of everything, mm-hmm. especially when the cover that's proving hard to find. At the same time, you know, this is an industry where gathered editions tend to sell a little better. A lot of people wait for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to make very, you know, it's there to get a good sales for the book, but this one did, you know, it didn't need the variants, but at the same time, I didn't mind seeing all these beautiful covers and all these artists excited to draw.
Yeah. And it's exciting to see that, you know, I'm not a variant collector, but it's exciting to see the art for it. And each time it drops, it's another news story, then another reason to be talking about the latest issue of G.I. Joe, which again can only help for you know, building up the excitement and making people realize that it's out there.
Yeah, and every artist, you know, asked to draw a cover was legitimately happy to do so, which is also a nice, you know, they remember Joe, they love Joe, and they want to draw the cover.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the variant cover process, how it sort of comes about, and how the artists get involved and how the covers are decided?
I am not entirely clear on the process, but from my point of view, what I was experiencing was, you know, Alex Anton, our amazing editor, had people he knew wanted to draw the book and would reach out and say, you know, would you want to draw the book? And they usually, I don't think he heard, knows, they'd get a sketch in, that would come my way. I mean, there are weeks where almost every day is like, hey, what do you think of this? What can we do? Is there, you know, and usually they were spot on. Most people are really familiar. There mm-hmm. might have been a few things off just a little, but, and so those were the covers that went for the book. The retailer variants, retailers would have to purchase a certain number of copies, and then they would be able to have their artist of choice do the book. And so those are usually their choice. And, you know, it's not just retailers. I would imagine, you know, anyone able to purchase a certain number of books, like a convention person, someone running their own convention, I imagine that's how that works too.
I think for the Transformers number one, there was a podcast that got their own variant, which is quite exciting for them.
You could do a Talking Joe variant of like 304. I forget the number of copies you have to order. Yeah,
I don't think I'd be able to convince Mrs. Talking Joe that about the investment there, but that would be an exciting
put
idea.
Put Mrs. Talking Joe on the cover. There you go. That might work.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't be the first time that that I've got an artist to draw. Because we've at a convention before, we've sort of we've got a family portrait done, which was quite fun.
That's good.
So let's rewind back a bit. This time last year, issue 300 was coming out. Kind of, what's been the journey for you and for the book behind the scenes as we've been sort of moving to 301?
Well, I don't know when everyone exactly got the news that this was that the license, but I think a good number of us got it all in the same email, where unfortunately we were told, and that was probably after they had found out already at IDW, but it was more than a year ago, so I was, you know, several months before that. I don't want to be exact in the timeline. I do know that we knew that whoever was getting the book was excited to be getting it,
mm-hmm.
It thrilled to be getting it. It was one of those really hard days because we only knew where Larry was going. So, you know, the book goes with Larry.
Mm.
If they're going to do G.I. Joe at another publisher, ARAH is always going to go. it, you know, it's not like they're only going to make their own and they don't want it. They always do. Of course they do. You don't have someone who's been writing the same comic on and off since 1982 and say, oh yeah, no, we don't want that anymore. Would be a very stupid, that's not a good choice. And I don't know any comic publisher that would do it. So we knew when we were putting together the last several issues, which is why we were going all in on making them fantastic. I mean, all the artists, we were doing it between Shannon and Andrew and Netho. Mm-hmm. And it was bittersweet because those issues were pretty amazing, really, for me. I mean, we were setting up something that had already been decided. It's not that what was happening was decided in being aware that the comic was going to another publisher. It was like, you know, we're going to keep going. And it must have been really hard for the people at IDW because, of course, they've had a huge shakeup over the last year, which isn't entirely really connected to losing this license. There's internal things that went on there, I believe. So that was kind of rough for everyone involved. It was when we finally were done with 300 and everything was done, I was in a holding pattern. Everyone else, you know, they were not going to carry over artists or colorists from IDW.
Yeah, you were in a burning C-130 circling Cobra Island, not...
okay, that's... We don't know. And me personally, I was like, I don't know what's going on. I instantly reached out to people at Hasbro and said, you know, I'm ready to go over. But then Larry called and told me that, you know, he was going to basically say, I need her to come with me, which is nice. Mm. He has no control over what they chose, but they did. They did. I eventually got a call from Alex and we discussed it. And this was before a lot of people knew. So I had to sit on this for a very long time.
Yeah.
And there have been fan theories that the license was going somewhere else for the last, 5 or 6 years? And so I've heard people ask me that multiple times. And my answer is usually, yeah, that gossip's out there again, huh? So I just had to keep saying, well, yeah, you know, we hear this all the time. Because I didn't want to wreck it. I'm not that kind of person. And it was hard because I had a lot of friends that I like to work with over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then that guy over your way again.
I don't like this collective blame. Sort of,
No, well, he's not you. He's just that side of the pond. Yeah. So I will never have to worry about running into him. That was hard to see that had been leaked because for him, it's news and it's a scoop. But for every single person who had been working on the comic, it was like, no, that's really mean. No, that's really horrible. They hadn't said anything and they were keeping it quiet and they felt horrible. You know, that's people losing jobs. That's people losing work that he gleefully shared. So that was a little upsetting to me. I'm that kind of person. I get mad about those things. Like, that hurts people. Why would you do that? Why would you jump on that gleefully? You know, and I don't know who he heard it from, but that person, that's mean of you too, you know, and they probably said it in just a conversation, but you got to be careful. Anyhow, so that really made me sad and mad. And then we just sat on it. I mean, we were working on, I got brought in. And got, you know, the first plot and sort of digitally met the Francesco and Chris. And we just started going. You know, it's different for them because my position is a really unusual one, sort of invented. So, you know, we just sort of worked out what was best because working styles is different between each teams. And so once we figured out how it worked best for everyone involved, it was pretty smooth since then. And they're freaking amazing people. I mean, that is the joy, is that Chris's art and Francesco's colors are, and I hope I'm saying that right, they mesh so well. you know, and they're back and forth to get it to work right. It meshes so well, and it has that sort of someone else online mentioned it as a faded newsprint kind of color, but then it's got more intense characters in a way than we've seen in a while. Mm. So that Kubert style of drawing, when I first saw the version of Serpentor Khan, mm-hmm. it just kind of blew me away because, okay, now he looks like a threat. You know, he looks really scary, and he did before, but they're doing things that we hadn't quite had the same leeway to do at IDW.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and he brings with him his own style and sort of you know, intentionally, I guess, so sort of trying to mix it up and try and make the book look different to how it has been looking before. Mm-hmm. You know, if Skybound just put the book out and it looked very similar to what it had been, you know, been before, I think even if it was still looked good, it wouldn't have that wow factor of it being different. And right. Sort of ushering in a new era. So, you know, we're seeing 301 dropping now, but I'm imagining the team has been beavering away for many, many, many months in the background. So your mind is probably, as well as sort of, you know, enjoying the reaction to 301 coming out this week, also several months ahead and you know, looking at the various issues, because there will be different processes as they come along, because I guess you're moving from initial plots through to a finished PDF to review.
Yeah, Larry writes the Marvel way, which works really well with the art team, because Chris likes Shannon, and he's like, Shannon put his stamp on the book, and there will never be anyone who drew, well, I can't say this, but Shannon drew more consecutive issues than anyone else ever has. Mm-hmm. So by the time he and Larry were in the 300s, it was seamless. And he's good with Larry's Marvel style because he gives him the power to interpret and get into that sequential storytelling, which he's good at. And Chris is the same way with a completely different style. So he's going to put his stamp on it. And so we get those plots, and I just, you know, I go over that plot to make sure there's no dead men walking and, you know, maybe a character wasn't there before, which hasn't been huge of a problem lately at all. And Chris is just interprets it. And Larry has always said right from the beginning, you know, here's my plot, but if you need to reinterpret something or draw it a different way than I've said that still makes sense, that's good. Because he wants the book to be collaborative, and coming from Marvel, where books were collaborative, the artist is part of the creative team. They're not just interpreting what Larry does. He wants them to get the story in their head and use the characters like a director and put in, you know, he wants that. He wants it to be collaborative. So from that point, you know, once the art is done and gets back to Larry, the scripting happens, and sometimes things go back and forth and have to be, you know, changed a bit. Mm. And I mean, usually by the time they're drawing and inking, Larry will have a plot for a couple of issues ahead. So right now, you know, 301 was finished a while back, and I know that we've got plots up to, I want to say, I don't know if I can say, but we're comfortably ahead of that.
Yeah, I think I saw a post from Larry a few months ago saying that he was on 304 at that point in time. So I imagine that that we must be some ways ahead of that in terms of, you know, that initial plot stage, which is nice to know that there's a you know, a bit of a backlog that went, you know, it's not that sort of that element of the artist being sort of under such tight pressure that they've got to get it out, you know, this week, because otherwise we're going to be behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Deadlines are deadlines, and there'll always be deadlines. And I've never been a place where the deadlines aren't like, oh God, we got to get it, because that's what they are. But they have been set in a way that it is, we've got that wiggle room. Mm. And Larry's motoring forward with, you know, he's excited about the story. It's a great story that he's working on right now. What's happening with everyone. And I do want to mention again that in these Skybound books, you'll see things that we not necessarily have had quite the freedom to do before. So it's grittier.
Okay.
Is a good way to say it. The characters are, it's hard to put it. It wasn't that it wasn't gritty. You know, it had to be put in there in ways that you had to sort of read between the lines. And some of the things that we haven't been able to do before are there. I'm not going to say it's all like, you know, arms a flying and snicking and everything, but it's good. It's definitely a Skybound take on the book. And I like that the freedom has opened up just a little. There are some things we're still not going to ever be able to do. And that's just going to have to be accepted.
Yeah. Is there anything specific or sort of more generally that you can talk about how the experience of working for the Skybound book is versus maybe the experience of working on the IDW book?
It's pretty similar. It's all a digital process. We're all in different places. And so the plot comes through and we start getting on it and I'll work on anything in the plot. My job now involves also, I'm working on continuing to compile a database of characters as how they have appeared. So that way, any new artist, I can send them that box, which makes it a lot better because, again, you had someone like Shannon who knew Joe and had been working on it so long. Larry would say, and then a blah, blah, blah goes by in the background and Shannon knew exactly what it was, you know. He could draw it. But artists who have not necessarily worked on the book or they're a little younger, so they weren't in, you know, they weren't kids in the 80s. They may not have collected all the toys. They know what it is, but they don't know everything in detail. They're not going to be able to do that. So the big difference right now is that these artists are fantastic, but sometimes something very niche to G.I. Joe might be mentioned. And they don't, what is that? And so if they look it up online, for example, let's say someone mentions Mainframe. Okay. We all know instantly anyone watching this who's a Joe fan, you and I, we all know what Mainframe is, right? But if you are not familiar with Mainframe, because he's not necessarily one of the big major famous characters, and you're looking up Mainframe online, you might get two completely different visuals of who Mainframe is. So you'll get the, you know, you can type in IDW Mainframe, right? There's the ARAH Mainframe, but then there's the Mainframe from the other books who is completely different, looks completely different. And so that's a problem. If you've got a deadline, you got to get the art done. So I want to compile what the characters look like in ARAH so that they have that to get to. You know, well, Crimson Guard Immortal. Well, if you don't know that Crimson Guard Immortal is a totally different person than a Crimson Guardsman, it's hard to get. And this is nothing on Larry or on Hasbro, but if you name a character a Viper, and then you have Techno Vipers, and you have Tele Viper, Toxo Viper.
That's the tease.
All the Vipers. But if you're not familiar with G.I. Joe, you wouldn't realize that when Larry says Viper, it's not the original Viper. If it's a Toxo Viper, it's not a regular Viper with a vacuum cleaner or something. So that can get a little confusing too to people who aren't involved. So it's useful to have just here is a list, and all you have to do is type in the name, and then you can see what they looked like in earlier iterations. And I try and get the file cards in there too. So if it's a single character, they understand what they're about. So that has been a little different because it's necessary and it takes me a little more time, but it's fun and it's worth it. Once I have it, I can use it where whatever happens, you know. It's nice.
301 is out. Have you got any specific behind the scenes nuggets about 301 and how that came about, how that evolved, any sort of Easter eggs that we might not have spotted?
Well, I'm looking through. Let's see. Well, one thing I do want people to know is that the letters page is now open again. And so IDW had stopped doing letters, and I know people missed that.
Yeah, sure.
And so Alex wants letters. So anybody who has any question, any comment, anything, let's see if I can find where he mentions it here. Because the back of the comic has, you know, if you want to see the process and you have it, if you go get the comic, I don't know if you can see that. But actually, a little bit of Chris's work goes on there. So He's got his sketches and his notes, and he's really detailed with that. And you might even see some changes if you look in there. But I don't know the letters column. I don't remember. I can't find the address here.
I've got it here. It's ARAH at skybound.com. And Mark, okay to print.
Yeah, there you go. So please, letters, 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 letters. Yeah. We want letters. We want people interacting with the comic again. What can I say about this? Oh, one thing I think that is really important is when you see the countdown clock, and I don't want to reveal too much about the issue, so I'm not going to do like spoilers, but when you see the countdown clock, we made sure that the countdown actually makes sense so that it happens in about the exact same time. And you know, so it doesn't go from like, it takes about, you know, from 13 seconds to one. I thought that was really cool the way they did that. That's just a me thing. But there aren't necessarily as many Easter eggs or hidden things in the book as one would think. I do want to say that there is coming up in the future, and I can't say who because that would be spoilery of me. There's going to be a couple of redesigned looks for some characters coming up, just one or two. And those are really beautiful. I mean, it is necessary to do a little redesign on a few people for a couple of different reasons. And Chris knocked it out of the park. I mean, what he came up with just is not only beautiful, but makes total sense to the character. So I'm looking forward to that.
Interesting.
I'm really looking forward to
Interesting.
That.
I've got thoughts already. Yeah. There was a couple of things about this issue, I guess, more unusual, which were the two summary pages bottling 300 issues worth of continuity into two pages as an introduction to new readers.
Yeah, that was tough because there's just no way to bottle up 40 years into two pages. I think originally there might have been four, but they wanted to fit in, you know, the stuff in the back as well as the bios. And for a jumping on point, he did a good job. You know, you can't get into all the intricacies. And also, honestly, it invites people to go pick up back issues and learn what had happened. You know, if people have taken a lapse from the comic and they open 301 and they're shocked, well, go back and buy, you know, from the last few issues. I've heard in, you know, some people say, well, is this a good, I think it makes it a good jumping on.
It's a bit like the experience that comics used to be where maybe they were less easy to sort of get hold of, you know, a back issue where, you know, if you didn't get it from the spinner rack, then it was gone and maybe you'd find it few years later. So very much my initial experiences of comics was sort of being thrown in at the deep end, picking up a random issue without knowing what had come before and trying to just, you know, sort of make sense of the mystery of sort of being thrown in the middle of the story, but it's still being an enjoyable experience. And I guess particularly with G.I. Joe, that generally, you know, the way that Larry will write things will be knowing that any issue could be someone's first and to make it accessible, even if you are in the middle of something.
He always writes like it might be the last issue, and he always has, because even back in the Marvel days, he never knew, you know, if they were going to say, well, okay, that was fun. So, and he writes as he goes. I think it's a good jumping on point. I'm kind of a little sad IDW didn't get to get out that last gathered edition so people could go pick up, the last chunk of the book. But hopefully that will somehow be rectified. And then people have easy access to it. It would be a little easier if digitally things were better. I know Comixology is not quite as good since Amazon picked it up. So it's a little more difficult to navigate. But you can kind of figure out what was going on beforehand with what 301 does in the plot itself. So I think it's a good jumping on point for lapsed or even new people. What happened in the past is going to be kind of necessary, but not really. I mean, you can just jump in on the cliffhanger and yay, they made it. And so moving forward, you can see the repercussions of that and what happens and the fallout from it, literally the fallout from it.
Yeah. And the, a bit of a spoilery, but not too spoilery if you have read issue 301. Preview of 302 has just dropped before, just immediately before this, we started doing this. So you can now out there on the interweb see a couple of pages of very intense pages from 302. So it looks like it's going to be a good one. And so the bio pages at the back of the book, how did that come about? Was that a relatively late addition to the process?
Both the intro and the bio pages were one of the last things done on the book. I actually wrote those.
Oh, wow.
So, which was nice. And of course, now I'm reading it, I'm like, what the heck? Why didn't I catch that mistake? But it's okay. Other people would see this. My husband's like, well, yeah, it makes sense. And it wasn't a continuity mistake. It's just like, why did I write that word instead of the right one?
Okay.
But yeah, Larry just said, hey, can you write these bios? And I said, well, yeah, okay.
So yeah, can you write a brief bio of Duke for the G.I. Joe comic?
Can I? Well, the hard part was getting them short enough so they could fit in those little squares, because each character is a really rich character. So I had to try and just get a good gloss so people got what they were about really quick. And I tried to put in the, quotes like the old file cards.
Yeah.
And I tried to slip in one that would make Chris happy, but I don't know if he's seen it yet. So.
Oh, yes.
So we'll see.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I saw that and thought, did Chris McLeod write this bio?
No. Actually, that particular character's bio, I think, made another person happy because it mentions twins.
Yeah.
I
saw that. A certain person on a certain message board would be, I'm sure, delighted by an acknowledgement in print that Zarana is shown as being the twin of Xandar. So that's delightful for that person.
I like doing that. Larry had already done that in a IDW issue, and I'm like, well, let's double down just it identifies her. It also mentions Xandar, so we can bring him in later. And why not make someone happy? It can be canon. No one said they weren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it just... people have twins sometimes. There, that's one.
that's the thing.
Look alike. They dye their hair the same color. Either that or they were born with some really strange genetic abnormality of pink hairness.
Pink hairness. That's the thing now.
Pink hairness.
Yeah.
Yeah, pink hairness. I still don't. I mean, their brother changes color, so.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they've all got that. Yeah.
Never know. And I don't understand what obsession their parents had with the letter Z, but. They had a zaddy.
And a zombie.
A zombie, yeah.
Before I forget, I did want to mention this, that there was an interview with Audible Interlude with editor Alex Antoni. Is that pronounced right? Antone or Antoni?
I know he's Italian, so it might be Antoni, but
you should probably just like Vincent, use your hands. Antone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it could be Antone. I wish I have to ask him now to be clear. It's like Vincent. It's like Falcon, right? Is his last name Falcone?
Tony.
Or Falcone?
Falcon.
I've never heard anyone say it, so I can't know. Now I feel bad about it.
And so he said something very nice, and I had to write this down. He said, Diana is spectacular, a wealth of knowledge, and very helpful, particularly to an editor who is not yet an expert on G.I. Joe. But it was so that was lovely, and also
that was lovely.
Chris Mooneyham gave you some props, let's say, in an interview that he did as well, about how helpful you've been in the process. So that's great.
That was very nice. They've put up with me. Because again, it's not usual to have that. And I know they have someone they brought on for the Energon universe. I just don't know who it is. I would like to know, because it's probably someone you and I know. I mean, I would imagine they're more of a Transformers fan. So I think it's cool that pays off for people, not just me, but for other people. But I have to add to all that, I wouldn't be able to do any I wouldn't be able to do a lot or any of this really if there weren't already these huge great databases that people had compiled that are out there. These things are difficult to find. These images are difficult to find. If there isn't a huge beloved fan group making sure that it's documented somewhere. So anywhere from 3D Joe's, Yojo.com, you know, those have been for a very long time go-tos for people long before I came on board. And then there are people like, good old Quick Quicks Theater, which isn't around anymore, that compiles information about the cartoon. And people who document all the images and the fact that thank God Hasbro's got the cartoons on YouTube too, so that we can go through those. And it's just fantastic. And Hasbro, they have sent me and a few others copies of everything they have that I can look through too. So it may take some time, but if I need something and I can't find it anywhere else, I can all skim back through issues if I know what the issues are. And without that, no one would be able to keep track of such a huge cast of characters and such a long-standing comic. It's just, it would be impossible.
Is that a digital archive of comics?
Of everything.
Lots of pretty other much assets as well.
Mostly it's comics for that. The other assets I go to online, or I pull out of books and try and scan pictures. Mostly it would be just online, because I have to provide, I can tell them what a character looks like, but it's far easier just to,
So I do sometimes wonder about the extent that Hasbro might have access to decent sort of digital copies of some of those stories that kind of got a little bit lost to the wind, like the ephemera of like some of those exclusive website issues.
Yeah, some things I think are gone, but you never know. I mean, they own it. So recently it's been a lot easier to get good digital copies because comics are now all released digitally. So they make sure that they're created in a high enough file that it looks great.
But yeah, if they ever do republish issue 21, maybe you can give them a prod and say, what about that 5-page prologue by Hammer and Ron Wagner. Maybe that can finally see a reprint.
See the light of day. Yeah, that might be something there are some things that I have not even in the Hasbro database and around been able to find. And I have thankfully, a good number of resources that I've either compiled myself or that are online. But when it comes to some just little bits of the comics that from the old ones that just, nobody scanned and they're not saved in any way. And all the books are kind of getting on in years. So that can get a bit difficult. They have a good run much every mainline thing, but even like you've seen, like there's some comics, where you have like, it's the vamp. Boop-a-doo, there it is. Sometimes those things aren't around anymore. And they have to be rescanned and juiced up a bit. And I'm sure that can happen. It's just getting the time to do it. It's difficult. But I am thankful that there are all these resources out there for the tiny little details that really matter. It really matters if a character is right or left-handed. It just does. People don't think about it, but that's that person. That's that person there. You flip the cover, do what you can. It matters. Or
eye color, for example, that's a thing, isn't it? How do you get that right?
Yeah. Well, and you don't go to the cartoons because sometimes their eye colors were different in the cartoons than the comic. And, the fact that they're based on real people. So you kind of want to get it right. Or even just things. And again, this has been something with Joe since the very beginning. You kind of got to be familiar with what the military is really like, even though it's a sci-fi book, really. It is based in reality and it's a lot more realistic, but it's always been a sci-fi book. It's always had giant robots and things. But when Larry means a gun, he means a gun. And, you use that gun. I have a book he recommended to me just when I was doing horrible fan fiction, just so I understood what the guns looked like and how they worked and what they were called and everything. And it's useful. And you want to make sure that even if it's a sci-fi gun, you make it look like it could exist. So if Scarlett's shooting a bunch of arrows, well, does she have time to reload? Or is there a feed? Well, of course there's going to be a feed, but you need to make sure you put that, because even though the cover looks glorious and beautiful, there's going to be that like one or two guys that see it and like, well, how is she reloading? Or, you know, along those lines. Or why is her finger on the trigger when she's not shooting anything? Those tiny little details, they make a difference to people who actually served. Mm. Uniform's got to be the right color. Yeah.
I've heard that that when it comes to like reviewing sort of the art, that Larry will sort of, is quite, you know, forgiving about a lot of things, but the specificity of weaponry is generally something mm-hmm. that he will pick up on if it's not exactly the one that he was described.
Yeah. And IDW made sure that they did, of course, because Tom Waltz, you know, was a Marine.
Right.
So it was important to him as well. And Skybound has also jumped on board with that. They want it to look right. They're willing to, you know, the details matter in these situations. And you've got to leave room for artistic interpretation. That's part of drawing the book. You know, you want to make sure that the artist can put his stamp on it. So you want to make sure that it's not just rehashing someone else's style, but everyone has been down firm and making sure that we're making sure the military part can be accurate. Hmm. You know, it has to, because there are people who are in the military who have read this book since they were kids. And that's one of the reasons they're in the military. So we'll come down to even things where there's a discrepancy between the toy and the military and the book. And so, for example, one thing I guess I could share is like drawing Duke's patch, his flag, right? The toy was always backwards. Realistically, the flag was backwards. It was just a mistake. You know, it was one of those tiny little mistakes that fits in there. And it did come down to, well, do we draw it accurate to the toy or do we draw it accurate to the military? And instantly, no, we draw it accurate to the military, you know, and if anyone complains, so okay. So I like that. I like the fact that even though it's science fiction, even though we're having a lot of fun having a total new look to the book, I'm going to keep on making sure that those little accuracies happen. And if I catch a finger on a trigger or Alex does or something, you know, Chris already knows not to do that, but there it matters. It matters. And so if I miss things, and I will, and Alex will miss things and Chris will miss things, because one thing I want everyone to remember, that all the people working on these comics are human beings and nobody's perfect. And so if you catch a little thing, not the end of the comic, it just somehow got by. And what did Tom Waltz used to say? Well, fix it in the trades. Fix it in the trades. You know what? We'll fix that in the trades. So bear with us.
If you can't explain it with a no prize, then that's on you. Because there are no mistakes,
right?
In G.I. Joe.
There are no mistakes. It's sci-fi. But a lot of people are looking for this, right?
For the benefit of audio-only listeners, Diana is holding up the Carson Thorne 301 retailer variant, which at the time of recording has yet to have a home announced for where you can buy it from. Okie dokie. Now you're just teasing people.
Well, let's do that. Okay, so I'm not teasing people. I know everyone's been, that's that, I'm backwards. So everyone's looking for the Carson Thorne cover, and I do want to remind you guys that I guess I can take it out of the plastic. There are foil variants to this, and so...
Oh, that looks nice.
Isn't that nice, shiny? Everyone's pew-pewing. So it's a virgin foil variant, and that cover is glorious. And usually, you know, when people ask me, I look on the back, and usually if it's a retailer incentive or a retailer variant, there the retailer's name would be back on there, and I haven't seen it. And so you asked me and other people asked me, I'm trying to see. I emailed Alex to ask about it, and I did get a response, and he does say it's a retailer variant. Excuse me while I scan over the emails. I asked him what retailer, and he said Whatnot.
Whatnot. Okay.
I didn't think Whatnot was a realtor. Do I disappear when I look at something else here? Or am I still on screen?
You're still there. You're still there. Yeah. So Whatnot is like an online platform. And typically you will have, it will be like specific vendors who have their platform as Whatnot. But yeah, there's definitely been Whatnot variants, and there was one for Void Rivals, which was quite hard to find, and I think that was the Alex Rigel variant. So that's I think that's an interesting exclusive piece of news for us, that there are two there are two variants of that Carson Thorne, and it will be Whatnot. That's excellent.
So yeah, I'm looking at Whatnot right now, and I can't see it, but that is what I was told. I'm sure they'll be hitting online through other retailers to see, but that's just the answer I got, was Whatnot. But yeah, so I'm not bragging about having them. That's just one of the benefits of all the work of the last few months, that I get, you know, I get comps, which is nice. My mother wants one, so, you know.
Excellent. Has she been an avid reader of G.I. Joe?
No. No. She was bearing with me while I looked for comics and bought comics when I was a little girl, and she definitely stepped over the vehicles and toys. But she wants this one. You know, she's excited. My dad wanted the special anniversary edition book. He wanted that. So that's nice. That's really good. She can read this. She said, "Do I have to read all 300 issues before this?" And I said, "Oh, no. Jump right in."
Yeah. You do, Mum. I won't give it to you until.
Yeah. Here, read that first, and then you can have it.
Right.
But she's aware of it. My dad calls G.I. Joe, what does he call it? H.K. Fred or something like that. H.K. Fred.
That's such a dad joke.
Yeah. I think they're, like a lot of parents, they're thrilled to see something I've been involved in since I was little. They just, you know, my parents are thrilled to see all this come to a head where I'm actually being able to be involved in a bigger way. It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to do. It's good to, you know, keeping me happy. And I think I would say it's kind of a golden time right now for G.I. Joe in terms of product and licensed products and comics and everything. And I hope that doesn't go away. You've got people who really care about the book at Hasbro, mm-hmm. and just the line, and they're fantastic people and a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that, you know, more people dive in.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like that, doesn't it? It does feel like sort of the various elements of it are sort of, you know, giving us a bit of a golden time that we've not seen in a long time, that you know, with the success of Classified being such a huge thing, that you know, the toys are, you know, so out there, and we've got all of these other sort of side projects happening as well, like, you know, Carson's 3D Joe's Art of, you know, of G.I. Joe book, or Super 7 and their mothership, or you know, all of these just amazing things.
Oh yeah, and Dan Klingensmith's book coming out, and just all the people doing their own like O-ring projects. It's great. I'm looking forward to Carson's book. I didn't realize. I saw the Comic Tropes interview with the guy writing Duke, and he's like, "Have you seen that book? Are you getting that book?" And you know, he's in the comic, and he's a Joe fan, and he saw Carson's book coming, and that's it. He's all in on that. Yeah. He wants it.
Right, as well.
So it's kind of a nice cycle. Wonder if one might find its way onto Kirkman's desk, because he's a mega Joe fan, really into Joe and Transformers.
Oh, he could turn it into a desk the size that it is.
And then you have the mothership, and then the book, and you have your G.I. Joe desk right there. But yeah, I got to say, Kirkman is a really huge G.I. Joe and Transformers fan. He was so eager to get this book, is what I've been told. And from just listening to the people who work closely with him, he is really thrilled to get both licenses and really wants to make them great books. I mean, he's dedicated to that. And that's, you know, he is super eager. super into it, and that's nice to know.
Have you seen much involvement from Kirkman, or has it been very much, you know, I've got my team, just go and do your things, and I'll be over here, you know, 1,000 miles in the air?
I have not even met him yet. I saw him at San Diego. He's a very busy guy. I mean, he's got all sorts of different things going on in all sorts of media. And, you know, he involves himself, I believe, in every single one, if possible. So he's got a lot going on. He's always sort of rushing around because he's always busy. I have not seen involvement directly through to me. I'm sure the meetings, you know, with Alex and the all the editors for the other books, and probably a lot of the artists as well. It doesn't, you know, I am the lowest head on the totem pole and the smallest cog in that wonderful team, which I don't mind whatsoever. So if I ever get to meet him, I will be thrilled to do so and thank him for continuing the book. But I'm sure his involvement does go into all the books. It's just like, it doesn't go down to my level. I'm not, you know, I'm sure he's in LA somewhere, and maybe I'll run into him in a convention, but that's happened before. I mean, I have to go to Joe conventions in Dallas to meet voice actors that live like down the street, because it's just, that's the way it goes. Everyone's busy.
From the interviews, it sounds like Larry's very much given a free rein to tell the story that he wants to tell. And I get the impression that probably it's the Skybound component is like the wrapping around that. So it's the art, it's the design, it's the paper, it's the coloring, it's the covers, more so than probably like story.
Yeah. If ever there's a direction that he would want to go that he can't, I'm sure then, you know, the editors or Hasbro would say, well, we can't really do that. That hasn't happened because he's been doing comics longer than the people who are, you know, editing and drawing and running and CEOing the companies and the books. So he has a good feel for where he can go and where he can't at this point, even though, you know, he's not getting the, you need to include these characters and this vehicles and this. He's not getting that. But there's very little that if he wanted to do it and he knew it was not going to fly, he'd figure out a way to do it that would. You know, he's good at that. It's instinctual with him. He knows what is possible and what is not. And like I said, we are given a little more leeway to be gritty in ARAH, and freaking the Cobra Commander book is basically a horror book. So I'm just, even with the previews you saw,
yeah,
I'm just like, wow, okay. That is something that back in even 10 years ago, we wouldn't be able to do. But there are a few lines that we already know not to cross. For example, you're just not going to get a Marine logo on any Marine anymore. That's just happening, and that's it. You know, certain characters can't wear certain things anymore. That really doesn't...
I immediately know what you're talking about.
That doesn't hamper the story. Yeah, that doesn't hamper the story whatsoever. You know, I'm not a different person if I'm not wearing my, you know, convention pin vest. One day I may not wear it to a convention, but it's fine. You know, I'll still act the same, just probably, you know, it's a little lighter since I'm not wearing it, so I can walk around a little more easily. And that's just a sign of the world. We can't do things that we used to anymore. And usually there's a good reason behind it. And why would you want to? You know, is it really that big of a deal to just say, okay, that's fine. That doesn't change the story. I'll let that one go. If the people writing the book are fine with it, then I don't really see why. And there are some things that I've argued. I know I go on at length, but there are some things, honestly, I have gone back and said, why? You know, and here are my reasons why I don't think it's something to be avoided. But and honestly, people will listen. They're not rude about it. But then they'll say, yeah, those reasons. But no. And okay, then you move on.
Okay. I've got somebody at my door. So I'm going have to.
Yeah, I can go on at great length. Sorry about that. It's been a great day.
So what I will do is I will, I think, end it there and just say Thank you so much for joining us, Diana, and I hope everyone jumps on and catches 301 if you have not done already. So
there's so many covers to choose from. Find the one you like.
So just remember that.
Do I have to sing?
Go on, sing for me.
I don't even remember the words. What is it? Nobody beats Talking Joe, an international podcast.
Cheerio.
Bye.